Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone, and our deep sympathies this morning to the loved ones of New York City police officer Russell Timoshenko, who was murdered after pulling over a suspected stolen vehicle in Crown Heights last week. As you've no doubt heard on the news, he was just 23 years old. On the force just a year and a half, he will be buried on Thursday. Timoshenko's partner, Herman Yan, was also shot, but in his bulletproof vest, and it looks like he's going to be okay. Police said the encounter began as a routine traffic stop. Later, Police Commissioner Kelly made a point of saying there is no such thing as a routine traffic stop. Last week was the 40th anniversary of the Newark riots. They began after the arrest and alleged brutality of a black taxicab driver, an encounter that also began with what was once characterized as a routine traffic stop. How many black motorists today feel constantly at risk of being stopped and even brutalized for what they see as driving while black? So for officer and driver alike, hardly any traffic stop feels routine. And we will take a few minutes now to dissect the anatomy of a traffic stop with Eugene O'Donnell. He's professor of law and police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He is a former police officer as well as a former prosecutor. Professor O'Donnell, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thanks, Brian. I might take a quick moment to offer my condolences to the officer's family and his colleagues, and I'm sure I speak for the John Jay community in offering our condolences.
And I'm glad you did. Under what circumstances are police supposed to pull cars over?
Well, obviously in New York City, this is the bread and butter part of the police operation, because this is proactive policing, and we saw the other night why it's so important that NYPD do these stops, because you pull over these individuals who have three weapons in the car. Undoubtedly, those weapons would have been used somewhere in this city, and possibly to kill somebody young or to paralyze or wound somebody. And we happen to be in a time in the city right now where things are relatively safe, but if you look at other cities in the country, there's an enormous level of gun violence and murder. And we've been fortunate that, thanks to the policies that NYPD pursue, that if you are carrying a weapon in New York City, the chances are they're going to detect it. And that's the message that they're trying to send with doing these what appear to be routine stops that never really are that routine.
This phrase, routine traffic stop, is it something that officers use? Does it refer to certain kinds of stops?
Well, basically in the police world, there's the routine stop and the felony stop, the felony stop being a stop that's precipitated by knowledge that somebody did something felonious or likely seriously criminal. The routine stop is the traffic stop that unfortunately many New Yorkers have encountered, which is really just about traffic infractions. But it can be, of course, the gateway to more serious offenses. And in a precinct like the 7-1, which is a precinct I happen to work in, that is a huge part of police work, because often the traffic stop forms the basis for enhanced suspicion, and often is the result is the interception of guns, again, guns that are used to kill people. We are in a, you know, I just want to underscore, we're in a very fortunate time in the city, but if you look at other cities in the country, Baltimore, Chicago, Washington, Philadelphia, the level of gun, Baltimore, I believe, has the same number of murders or just about that as we have in the city of New York, and they're a much smaller place. So this is why the police sometimes come in for criticism about these stops.
You used the phrase a minute ago, enhanced suspicion. The stop leads to enhanced suspicion. What does that mean?
Well, obviously, there's no science to this. This is something that you get with experience. But clearly, unfortunately, in this situation, there were grounds for whatever the reason was for the stop. There were grounds for believing, or as we found out later on, that these individuals were using this vehicle to ferry around these guns. So.
And I was curious about an aspect of that. The officers ran a license plate check on this SUV and saw that it didn't seem to match, that is the license plate, didn't seem to match the vehicle
right.
That the plates were registered. And I'm curious, what would have led them in the first place to run a license plate check on that SUV? I'm sure they don't run them on every car they see.
Well, actually, in some cities now, there's the development of technology that allows you to run a plates. There's technology that allows for almost constant scanning of license plates as police vehicles are driven around. But there probably was some reason that perhaps the way the license plate is attached, something about the vehicle that just doesn't look quite right. Something that you actually do pick up as a police person after a while. You get a sense that something is not correct. Unfortunately, of course, sometimes the information that you get even from a computer check is not accurate, so the cops have to be cautious, but they can't be too heavy-handed because sometimes it turns out that it's a legitimate car and there's no problem.
And maybe this is just semantics, but I was wondering if that stop in Crown Heights last week that ended in the shootings, whether it would be referred to as a routine traffic stop. If they had already information indicating that the plates might not match, which would indicate that it could be a stolen vehicle, I would think that would be seen as a more threatening than average situation.
Yeah, I mean, the skill of this job and the complexity of this job is making these judgments in real time. So you may one moment be on a very routine stop, and obviously on a very next moment it could escalate to the most serious kind of stop. It's too bad that those things weren't done in kind of a calibrated way. Unfortunately, you could pull over a vehicle and have a shooting right away. So it's very difficult to say when to actually articulate when these stops are escalating. Sometimes things that look very ordinary turn out to be very, very problematic, and sometimes things that you are sure. I mean, I pulled over many cars where I thought something would be amiss, and it wasn't.
We're calling this segment Anatomy of a Traffic Stop, and we can take your phone calls for Eugene O'Donnell from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and a former police officer. We can take your phone calls for him about traffic stops that you've been involved with as a driver or a police officer, or just your questions about how traffic stops work at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What's the police officer supposed to do after he signals the car to pull over?
Well, again, I don't want to be evasive on this. The problem we have is the police are at a disadvantage on these stops, and I really don't want to spend too much time talking about tactics, but basically control is a big issue, where and when, how you make the stop, and also to some extent distracting the motorist is one of the strategies. And then the other strategies are for officers to try to take cover if they can, a place that puts them in a safe position, and of course to be wearing their vests, which I think in one case saved one of these officers.
Yes.
So those are the kinds of things that officers are looking to do.
So you don't want to give away too many tactics that may put an officer at risk if there's too much knowledge out there. But to the extent that you feel comfortable, how do the officers protect against the possibility that the occupants of the vehicle will start shooting at them, as happened in this case?
That's a very hard thing to do. If you go to a precinct like the 71st Precinct, you typically get a lot of very committed officers that are serious about the business, and really every car stop is a learning experience, so that you do learn things on every single stop. But what we saw in this case, and we saw it unfortunately with the unarmed auxiliary officer in the Village, not a whole lot you can do if somebody who's being pulled over, decides to shoot. We're a civilian police department, after all. This is not Kirkuk. The cops can't have the kind of stops that they might have in a war zone. Most of these stops will end without incident, and they have to deal responsibly and respectfully for people. But in this case, there was a determination by these guys in the car to start shooting.
You talked about distracting the driver. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a few different ways to do it. Sometimes if anybody's been pulled over by the highway patrol, you notice they don't pull you over right away. They pick the time and the place, and sometimes that has a distractive value.
You mean they tail you for a while?
That's right.
And they let it be known to you that they're doing that?
Well, they want to try to get some sort of upper hand. They want to, again, pick the location. They want to run your information, and they want to do a little psyops on you so that you're a little bit thrown off, so that if you decide to do something, you might even do it while they're tailing you, so that they're trying to get some sort of advantage, because they are at a disadvantage. The best they probably can do is try to somewhat level the playing field.
Are there common ways that traffic stops go bad?
Well, the cops have to be careful in misdiagnosing things, and either diagnosing things wrongly in terms of overreacting, but also probably the huge issue is to not take them seriously enough. And Also, officers are encouraged, and in a precinct like the 7-1, this definitely happens for officers to back each other up. So if you work at a busy precinct, the cops in New York City are quite good at backing each other up because it's almost always better to have four or six cops there if you have to have them.
Shane in Lakewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shane.
Hi, how you doing? I'd like to speak to the police officer about a situation that happened to me. Basically, I was pulled over. Myself and my girlfriend were driving. I had something to drink before we left the house. We got pulled over, and the police officer carded me. He carded both of us. It's like he was looking for a warrant.
Well, all I could say to you is that for any of us who've been pulled over, and I think most Americans have been pulled over, it's a hard thing to keep in mind, not to take it personally. It's not a personal thing. They don't know who you are, and they have no animus against you. They're doing their job. And
can a police officer do what he just described, assuming that's actually what happened, that somebody in the passenger seat was drinking and was carded? I guess that means to see if he's underage.
Well, it's against the law for somebody to have a open container in the vehicle. So in that sense, the police probably could take even further action by arresting. It's a little known fact, by the way, that when people commit traffic infractions, they can actually be arrested. You're actually sort of in custody. If you run a red light and you, for example, didn't have identification on you, the police would be perfectly, it would be perfectly appropriate for them to order you out of the car, handcuff you, and bring you to the precinct.
That's a lot of what goes on in New York City's broken windows policy for pedestrians. I'm not sure about drivers of vehicles, you could tell me, but if people do little things like jump turnstiles or ride a bicycle on the sidewalk and they get a ticket, the cop runs a check on them to see if they have anything outstanding, right?
Right. Well, you know, the subway stuff was very interesting when Bill Braddon was here. They learned that people that were doing bad things in the subway weren't paying their fare. They were hopping the turnstile to get in there. And the transit police then made some terrific arrests of people hopping turnstiles who turned out to be really bad people, wanted on warrants, who had done very serious crimes.
Ron in North Bergen, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Yeah, it's a shame what happened to this officer, for sure, but I mean, he was kind of young on the force to be making this kind of gut decision. I know over here in Jersey, when you get pulled over, in no time, there's at least three cop cars behind you. And I don't know if you've ever tried to read the Bill of Rights to a cop before, but it doesn't really go well.
Well, again, this is the difficult balancing act in the city, and that's why I might have been talking at some length earlier. And I don't want to really beat this into the ground, but the value of these stops ultimately is that there are thousands of people in New York City who are not dead anymore or weren't killed in the last 10 years. Who were, you know, we had a murder number that was 2,200 murders. We're down to 500.
So what you're really saying is increased traffic stops is the highway equivalent of the stop and frisk policy for pedestrians.
Oh, there's no question. Look, there's no science. You know, you can't back this up scientifically, but I think it's well known in the law enforcement world that when the cops are out doing their job and proactively stopping people, the bad guys know that.
So do you think that people are getting stopped on the streets of New York for smaller things than they were 10, 15 years ago?
It's a very difficult balancing act. There's no question that one of the tools, the difficult balancing act, is to be aggressive but not to go over the top. And there may be stops and frisks. There may be too many of them at this point. It's just hard to figure out what the right balance is. But, you know, there are cities in America. I mean, I hope I'm not beating this to death, but there are cities in America where you don't really have to worry much about the cops stopping you because the cops don't do much. And the murder rate skyrockets and crime is out of control. And there is definitely a connection, almost a provable connection, between traffic stops and the interception of more serious criminal conduct.
We're talking about traffic stops with Eugene O'Donnell from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and a former police officer, and of course in light of the horrible murder of police officer Russell Timoshenko after what was originally described as a routine traffic stop. Lucas in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Lucas.
Hi, how you doing? Good morning. I got a question because I just wanted to ask if you stop a car like the police officers did, and the plates didn't match, couldn't they just do it as felony stop, which is, I believe it's they got to stop in front of the car, like a couple feet away, and open the doors, cover behind them, and draw their weapons?
Yeah, they could do that. And, again, we'll never know probably for sure exactly what happened. But remember that the flip side of that is that if you talk to the Civilian Complaint Review Board and you talk to police commanders, pulling a gun on somebody who is a law-abiding person who is simply doing a traffic infraction doesn't tend to go down well with people. And I certainly have seen situations where the vehicle looks very problematic, but it turns out that the person driving it is a minister or is a business person in the community. And so you don't want to be that heavy-handed.
So procedures are different for what's called a routine traffic stop and what's called a felony stop.
Right. I mean, for example, if you responded to the scene of a robbery and the robber, and I've had this happen, the robber has gotten into a car and taken off, and the eyewitness tells you, that guy robbed me with a gun, that's going to be a very different stop than a traffic
right.
stop.
So what about this case? Is it a shade of gray situation where they have suspicion that the car may be stolen because the plates didn't match the vehicle? Is that does that fall squarely in or out of felony stop or routine stop?
Very little falls squarely within. What I described probably before with the robbery, that falls squarely within. But
right.
again, the things, I mean, I know they change really moment to moment. And as I've said, I've seen situations where the car looks completely dirty, completely problematic, and it turns out to be, for example, somebody lends a car to somebody and reports it stolen.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
We've had that.
Are civilian complaints stemming from traffic stops common?
Actually, not as common as you might think. Civilian complaints generally are a relatively small number, but the angst and problem that you have, particularly in the minority community, is a huge issue, and that has to be balanced. A lot of these stops are involve people in places in Brooklyn North, in the African American community, and you have to be very sensitive to the community there. Most of the people in those communities aren't committing any serious offenses and deserve to be treated with respect.
Andrew in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good morning, Brian.
What you got?
I'm a young African American male in early 20s. I drive a 2005 Honda Accord. You know, I've never had any problem with getting pulled over. I've been pulled over a lot of times. I don't tint the windows because I know, that could pull more officers to my car. So I don't tint the window. Whenever I get pulled over at night, I turn all the lights on. I take the key out of the ignition. I put it on the dashboard. But I never got any problem. The problem, something happened a few months ago with my nephews. Two of them were driving my car. Don't have any tickets on it or anything. They had about three friends with them. They went to the movies, were coming back. They got pulled over in the Bronx. They searched the car. The cops didn't find anything. And they arrested them, put them in jail for the night, and then let them go in the next morning. When I called the precinct and I asked them about what happened, my nephew said, don't stress it because my name aren't in the system. They didn't put us in the system. All they did was just hold us for the night and let us go. Now, my question is, stuff like what happened in Queens, and I'm very sorry about what happened in Queens. I think it's horrible. It shouldn't have happened. How could stuff like this be stopped?
Professor O'Donnell,
I have to say personally that I have a deep concern about the overuse of arrests and punitive sanctions against people. And I respect this commissioner enormously and this police department enormously, and I think, the work they do is important. But there has been, I think, in New York and maybe elsewhere, kind of an acceptance of arrest of people as not a big deal. Arrest and detention of people is a big deal. It's a free society. And we should not take that lightly. And some of the arrests involving people and actually ending up doing 24 hours in jail, where they're not going to do any time after the case is even disposed of, the worst they're going to get is a fine. I think that's a concern. So I would agree to some extent that while we have to have a balance, we have to have this kind of crime detection that. Detention of people and arresting of people, again, in a free society, should be done very, very carefully.
Always a fraught situation for officer and driver. Andrew, thank you for your call. And Professor Eugene O'Donnell, former police officer and prosecutor, now professor of police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, thanks for giving us a deeper understanding of the so-called routine traffic stop.
Nice to be with you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, Michael Eric Dyson reacts to the possible impending return of Don Imus and the Nas album that says hip-hop is dead. Stay with us.